During the intertestamental times, and certainly in the New Testament, the name Simon was a very common name. You had Simon the Tanner from Acts chapters 9 and 10. You had Simon the Pharisee who invited Jesus to dinner in the book of Luke chapter 7. You had Simon the leper in the book of John chapter 12 and Matthew chapter 26. You had Simon the brother of Jesus. One of Jesus' own brothers was named Simon. And then you had one of his disciples. Well, actually two of his disciples. One was named Simon and he was called the Zelotes, the Zealot. Then you had Simon Peter. You know, he was whose name was Petros. They turned that Simon Peter. And then you had a man who came from the area of Cyrene. His name was Simon. They grabbed him and made him carry the cross for Jesus in the book of Matthew chapter 27. And then you have in the book of Acts chapter 8 another man by the name of Simon, and his name was Magus, the great. Simon the Great. He was going to be the great one, you know, Simon. But then we meet up with a name with a person that we never really meet. You never meet him, he's never actually there. You don't see any of his actions. You don't see anything that he does, but you hear of his name. And the only reason you hear of his name is because of his son. Hi, Simon. What's your son's name? Judas. He becomes famous for his son. His son became the most infamous traitor and betrayer of all time. How did it happen? Well, let's start with the book of Mark, chapter 14. You know, Judas was one of the 12. He heard all of Jesus' statements. He saw the miracles. He heard the most wonderful words in the world, the words of salvation from Jesus Christ himself. But he did something that nobody thought he would ever do. And nobody understood it. And most people have been puzzled. How could you do that? How could you? It all began here in the book of Mark, chapter 14. Well, this is not necessarily where it all began, but it gives us a clue. Now, the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread were 2 days away, and the chief priests and the scribes were seeking how to seize him by stealth and kill him. They didn't know how. You know, we want to get a hold of him, but, you know, a lot of people are coming into town. He's very popular. We don't just dare. For they were saying, you know, not during the festival. Otherwise, there might be a lot of riot from the people. There may be a riot of the people. While he was in Bethany at the home of Simon the leper. Now, he was there for another Simon, and we see it here. And reclining at the table, there came a woman with an alabaster vial, a very costly perfume. Of pure nard, and she broke the vial and poured it on his head. But some were indignantly remarking one to another, well, why is this perfume, you know, well, why is it being wasted? He put a whole vial of perfume on this man's head, on Jesus' head. For this perfume might have been sold for over 300 denarii and the money given to the poor. And they were scolding her. You know, I mean, it's a big waste of a woman. You know, put all this on Jesus' head. But Jesus said, now, a lot of people would disagree with that. You know, they would say, well, the disciples were right. It should have been given to the poor. Why are you pouring it all on Jesus' head? It's very valuable. But Jesus said, let her alone. Why do you bother her? She has done a good deed to me. For you always have the poor with you. And whenever you want, you can do good to them, but you do not always have me. Isn't that such a truism? It's a truism. You will always have the poor, and anytime you want to do good to somebody poor, there's somebody poor to do good to. Always will be. So he says, you don't always have me. She has done a good deed. In other words, what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for the burial. Truly I say to you, wherever this gospel is preached in the whole world, what this woman has done will be spoken of in memory of her. And of course, now it's written in the gospel accounts. So wherever you preach the gospel, wherever you talk about Jesus' life, this woman's name is going to come up. This woman's what she's done. Now, who was this woman? Well, we go over to John chapter 12, and we're going to see that the woman was none other than Mary, Lazarus' sister. So here's what we read. John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1. Jesus, therefore, 6 days before the Passover, came to Bethany, where Lazarus was, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So they made him a supper there, and Martha was serving, and Lazarus was one of those reclining at the table with him. Mary then took a pound of very costly perfume of pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus. Now, Mark's gospel put the head on, but she anointed the feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. So evidently she dumped some on his head, dumped it all over his body. It's like, my goodness, you're wasting this, putting it on a person's feet. I mean, how silly. Verse 4, but Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, who was intending to betray him, already he was intending, said, why was this perfume not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? Now, in Mark's gospel, it says the disciples were saying this. They were indignant. Why wasn't it sold? But evidently, Judas was the instigator of this idea. He would go to the other disciples, look at this. This is such a way. And yeah, that's right. It really was. You know, hey, well, why are you wasting? And so he got a few of the people all hyped up about, you know, wasting this wonderful perfume. Why was this perfume, you know, not given to the poor people? Verse 6, this is John 12, verse 6. Now, he said this not because he was concerned about the poor, but because he was a thief. He didn't care about the poor. You know, there used to be it's a mantra. If you really want to get rich, be concerned about the poor. Establish some kind of charity for the poor, and you do it for the poor. Noriega got rich. Down in Venezuela, they got rich. We're going to do something for the poor. That's the big, fastest way to get very, very wealthy. The poor won't get wealthy, but the people doing for the poor will get wealthy. So here was Judas. He wasn't concerned about the poor. He was a thief. And as he had the money box, he used to, listen to this verse, pilfer, take from it. He would steal from. Other translations use the word steal from. The Greek word means he would take from the money box. Therefore, Jesus said, let her alone so that she may keep the day of my burial. For you always have the poor with you. You do not always have me. The large crowd of the Jews then learned that he was there. They came to, not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, who had been raised from the dead. Now, it's already known what Jesus did for his friend Lazarus, right? You know, he almost was stinking. His body had been dead for a while. And he now was raised from the dead. So look in verse 13, John 12. The chief priests planned to kill Lazarus also, because he was the emblem of Jesus' power to resurrect somebody from the dead. And everybody, is it true that you were really dead? You talk to my sister. Talk to other people who saw me come out of the grave. Talk to them. Yes. Yes, Jesus healed me. He resurrected me. He brought me back to life. They wanted to kill him because on account of him, verse 11, this is John 12, verse 11, because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and believing, going away from the Pharisees, going away from their churches, going away from their religion, and they were turning to Jesus Christ. In John chapter 6, verses 68 through 71. Now, John chapter 6, you remember he was talking about, you have to eat my flesh and drink my blood, otherwise I'm the living bread came down. And many of the disciples at that time got upset. Well, we're not going to, you know, these are not the 12 now, but many of the other disciples. He had a lot more than 12 disciples that followed him, but he's 12 were the select ones for the apostleship. And these people said, we can't walk anymore. We can't take this. We can't take all this statement. It's too offensive. So they walked away. And Jesus now talks to Peter in John 6, verse 68. Simon Peter, and Jesus asked Peter, are you going to leave too? Are you going too? And Peter answers in verse 68. Simon Peter answered, Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. Now, this is what all the disciples knew. And we have believed and have come to know that you, Lord, are the Holy One of God. Jesus answered and said, did I myself not choose you, the 12? And one of you is a devil. One of you is the accuser. You're a devil. You know, the diabolos, mean the devil accusing person. Now he meant Judas. This is verse 71, John 6, verse 71. Now he meant Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. This is the way the New American Standard Version reads it. He meant Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was going to betray him. So in chapter 6 of John, already way before the time of the Passover, it was stated he was going to betray him. Then Judas Iscariot, this is John, Mark chapter 14. Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, he went off with the chief priests in order to betray him. This is Mark 14, verse 10. So you see the perfume incident, which labeled Judas. Well, why was this? Why was it? He didn't care about the poor. He was a thief. So already bad character is showing up here. Very bad character. A thief, but he wanted to betray him. We don't know exactly all the reasons. We'll see if we can put that together. Then Judas Iscariot, one of the 12, this is Mark 14, verse 10, went to the chief priests in order to betray him. They were glad when they heard this and promised to give him money. And he began seeking how to betray him at the opportune time. He had to have the right time. Where am I going to see? Where should we arrest him? I mean, a lot of people in town. Jesus was well known. You try to arrest him in the middle of the square with a lot of public, you're going to get people defending him. Where can we go? Where can we get him? So Judas is looking for this time. He's looking for this place. Matthew chapter 26, verse 14. Then one of the 12, named Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, now, not only did he go to the chief priests, listen to what he asks. What are you willing to give me? I'd like to betray him, but what do you give me to betray him to you? I'll betray him. I'll turn him over to you. I'll force him to you. What will you give me? And they weighed out 30 pieces of silver to him. From then on, he began looking for a good opportunity to betray Jesus. This is Matthew chapter 26, verses 14 through 16. And now Luke chapter 22. Now here they are on that night that where they're going to take what we call the Last Supper. The chief priests and the scribes, this is Luke 22, verse 2. The chief priests and the scribes were seeking how they might put him to death, for they were afraid of the people. And verse 3, and Satan entered into Judas, who was called Iscariot, belonging to the number of the 12. He was one of the chosen 12 going to be apostles, the leaders of the church, the carriers on of the very most personal talkings and teachings of Jesus Christ. And Satan entered into Judas called Iscariot. And he went away and discussed with the chief priests and officers how he might betray him to them. And they were glad that they agreed to give him money. You know, he bargained for money. He asked, how much will you give me? And he consented. So he consented and began seeking the opportunity to betray him. And apart from the crowd, he had to find a place privately where Jesus would be, that he could betray Jesus and lead them to him. So in John chapter 13, verse 2, now by the time supper, now this was the supper was here. You'll see it in verse 2. The devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot. Judas. And it says, Judas, Simon Iscariot's son, the son of Simon, to betray him. He already had it in his heart. He was already a thief. You know, you start with little chips in your character. Chips, little chip. Chip here, a chip here in your character. And after a while, you know, you become one of Satan's tools. And here was this man, he wanted to steal. He was a thief, and he couldn't care less about people out there. He couldn't care less. He was a thief. And what happened to him? Satan finally entered him. Satan had put it in his heart to betray Jesus. So he's still looking. He's looking for the very best opportunity he could have. So in Mark chapter 14, and it was evening. This is Mark 14, verse 17. When it was evening, he came with the 12. And as they were reclining at the table and eating, Jesus said, truly I say to you. Now he's saying to all of them, ye, to all of you, that one of you will betray me. One who is eating with me. Now you have to understand what eating meant. You know, when you eat with people, what are you saying when you eat with people? There's love. You know, you don't want to eat with people you hate. You just don't want to eat with people you despise. You don't want to eat with people that you have a vengeance for. No, you don't want to eat with that because that's not a good climate. You eat with people you love. You eat with people you care for. You eat with people you want to be with. This is what he said. Here they were, one who is eating with me. He's going to betray me. One who is eating right here. They began to be grieved. And to say to him, one by one, surely not I. You know, somebody's saying, imagine somebody said this, one of you is going to kill me. Yeah, well, you don't think it would be me. I wouldn't do that. I would. Everybody's now saying, oh, sure, you know, because one of the things we all know, what do we all know about ourselves? We are capable of sin. That's what we all know. It'd be impossible. I could never do a bad thing. Oh, I always do the right thing. I never do a bad thing. Oh, no. That's not you. Or else you're deceived. We all could. So they get up. One of you is going to betray me. And you know, each person is doing introspection. Surely it wouldn't be me, would it? It wouldn't be it's not I. And he said, it's one of the 12, one who dips with me in the bowl. For the Son of Man is to go just as it is written of him. But woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for him, for that man, if he had not been born. That's verse 21, Mark. So now in Matthew's chapter 26, there's a very interesting little nuance that most people don't pick up. But let's take a look at it. Matthew 26, verse 22. He says the same thing. It's the same incident. Only it's Matthew's recording of it. So he says, you know, one of you is going to betray me. In verse 22, Matthew 26, verse 20, being deeply grieved. Now, they're all upset. Somebody's going to betray him. Every one of them is very deeply upset. They each one began to say to him, surely not I, Lord. Okay, surely not I. But if you drop down three more verses in this verse, Judas comes up. Now, you know, each one of these others, 11 others, and the 12th one is Judas here. And Judas, who was betraying him, said, "Surely it is not I, Rabbi." Jesus said, "You said it yourself." I want you to notice the very subtle difference. Each one of the other disciples said, "Surely not I, Lord." Word, Greek word, kurios, Lord. It's the same word that when you translate something from the Old Testament where the Yahweh is used, it's the word Lord. It's used. They use the word Lord. The word means owner, master. I'm the master, I'm the owner. They looked at Jesus Christ as Lord. How did Judas Iscariot look at Jesus Christ? Well, you're a rabbi. You're a teacher. You're, that's all. He did not call him Lord. And he did not call him Lord when he betrayed him. So let's take a look now. This is Judas comes up to him in verse Matthew chapter 26, verse 25. "Surely it's not I, Rabbi." And Jesus said, "You said it yourself." John 13, verse 2. We see the picture here. During supper, the devil have already putting in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. And you drop down now in Matthew and John chapter 26. Jesus said that this is the one whom I shall dip the morsel and give it to him. So now, as they're sitting at the table, you remember the story. I won't take the whole time there in Matthew and John chapter 13. Peter indicates to John, who was sitting next to Jesus and reclining. You know, remember John was the disciple Jesus loved. You know, they were closer to. And he was leaning on Jesus' breast. And Simon Peter goes, you know, "Ask him, you know, find out who it is." And so John says, you know, because he's saying, "One of you going to betray me?" And Peter says, you know, "Find out." And he says, "Lord, who is it? Who is it?" And Jesus said, "It's the one that I dip with." So when he had, now this is John verses 27 now, when he had dipped the morsel, he took it and gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Once again, three times Simon Iscariot is mentioned. After the morsel, Satan entered into him. As soon as he took that morsel, it says Satan took control. Therefore, Jesus said to him, "What you do, do it quickly." Now, no one reclining at the table knew for what purpose he'd said this to him, for some were supposing that because Judas had the money box, that Jesus was saying to him, "Buy the things we have need of for the feast," or else that he should give something to the poor. In other words, what are you going to do? Hurry up, get it done. So after receiving the morsel, he went out immediately. He took this, Satan entered into him, and he left. Now prior to that, you'll see, prior to verse 26 of John, Jesus washed all the disciples' feet. He dried them with the towel that he was girded with. And he was doing that. He did it for every single one. It was Peter who said, are you going to wash my feet? No, you're never going to wash my feet. I won't let you do that. And then Jesus said, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part with me. Okay, well, maybe you should do my head and my hands. And Jesus said, look, you've already bathed. All you need is your feet washed. So one of the 12 whose feet Jesus washed was Judas Iscariot. It was night. When John's gospel, Luke's gospel says this, but John's gospel primarily uses that word. That word night is significant. It's not in this gospel for nothing. Night became the darkness. Night became the evil. You know, the day and light is truth, but darkness out here, everything, you know, sun, you're in the dark. You know, that's deception. That's where the evils now take place. Judas knew the place. In book of Mark, Mark chapter 14, verse 44. Now, he who was betraying him had given them a signal Now, he knew where Jesus was going to go. By the time, at the end of that supper, Jesus told him, we're going to go out to the Garden of Gethsemane. That's where we're going to be. And you remember the Garden of Gethsemane. He was in there. He went to pray, and he asked his disciples, please pray with me. Now, Judas had already gone. He'd left. Do it quickly. He went to the Pharisees. He said, and the Sadducees, and the people with the spears and all that, the guard. I know where he is, and now he's alone. He's down here only with a few disciples. Only his 12. He had the closest people to him. So this is the time. This is now. Follow me. And he gave them a signal. The person that I kiss, you see me walk up to him. Which means he wasn't wearing white and everybody else wearing dark colors. He wasn't have long hair and everybody else had short hair. Jesus was not that distinctive. Some people who might not, they never had any interaction with Jesus, but they were now police and they were people with the spears and the swords and they were going to arrest him. They didn't know what he looked like. So he said, I'm going to kiss him. When the man I kiss, that's who you get. Seize him. So Mark 14, verse 45. After coming, Judas immediately went to him, meaning to Jesus, saying, Rabbi! Not Lord. He wasn't Jesus' Lord. He didn't look at Jesus as his Lord. It was Rabbi. I liked your teaching. It was pretty good. And he kissed him. And of course, you know what Jesus said. Let's take a look at Mark and Luke chapter 22. Dropping down to verse 46, Luke 22. And he said to them, Jesus now saying, why are you sleeping? Get up and pray that you may not enter temptation. And while he was speaking to his disciples, behold, a crowd came, and the one called Judas, one of the 12, was preceding. He was leading this group of people to arrest Jesus. He was ahead of them, and he approached Jesus to kiss him, and he said, and Jesus said to him, Judas, are you betraying the Son of Man with a kiss? How awkward, how incongruous can you be? You're kissing me, although you love me, and the whole purpose for the kiss is to betray me. The kiss is supposed to be an indication you love me. You're now doing it to betray me. Well, Judas betrayed him. We know the story. They came and they arrested Jesus. He went into a trial and all that. And they put him on the trial. And we know the denials. And he went to Caiaphas and he went to Pilate. We come to a little interesting passage here in the book of Matthew chapter 27. Matthew 27 verse 1. Now when morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people conferred together against Jesus to put him to death. And when they bound him and led him away and delivered him to Pilate the governor, and we the Jews had quite a lot of authority there. They had a lot of authority to push, but they couldn't put people to death except for stoning, but they wanted to turn it over to the governor. You execute him. They brought him to Pilate the governor. And when Judas, verse 3, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned. Oh, no. No, I thought they were going to just kind of, beat him up or arrest him. First of all, put your mind in Judas's mind. Do you think when he was with Jesus and they were saying several things, remember one of the things Jesus said, and he said, I know I'm going to be, they're going to deliver me up. I'm going to suffer. The Son of Man's going to suffer many things and be crucified. Peter and them said, how can this happen? And Jesus said, don't you think I could stop this? And even that night when he pulls out a sword, put your sword away. Don't you think that I could call the Father and he would send in legions of angels? Now, if you're Judas Iscariot, and you'd seen miracles, and you say, they're going to take him. This is going to be fun to watch. Okay, this is going to be. I'm going to tell them where he is. Let's see if they can get him, man. Yeah, I've seen him do things that were miraculous. I've seen him heal people. I've seen him raise the dead. I've seen him do all this. You know, if they ever lay a hand on him, you know, it'll be a miracle. But all of a sudden, they laid hands on him. They've taken him away. They've condemned him. And now, oh my, I never dreamt it would go this far. I never dreamt. Hey, and Jesus is submitting to this. So when Judas, verse 3, who had betrayed him, saw that he had been condemned, he felt remorse. Now, what does that mean when you feel remorse? You're sorry. I'm sorry I did this. I shouldn't have done this. This is not right. I didn't mean it to go this far. I didn't want it to be like this. He felt remorse. And what did he do? He returned the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and the elders. He went right back. He said, look, I made a mistake. You know, I don't want it. You know, let him go. Here's your money back. And saying, I have sinned, verse 4, I have sinned. Now that's sort of an insight, you know. A lot of people don't even acknowledge that they've sinned. That's sort of insightful. I have sinned. I have betrayed by betraying innocent blood. The man is innocent. Hey, look, this guy didn't do anything. What do they say? Tough luck. What's that to us? What do we care what the situation is? That's your problem. See to it yourself. That's your problem. You know, tough luck, man. That's your problem that he's innocent. That's your problem that you betrayed innocent blood. That's your problem. Don't ask us. So Judas, verse 5, threw the pieces of silver into the temple sanctuary. And departed and went away and hanged himself. He couldn't live with it. Now, a lot of people think suicide is the unpardonable sin. You know why a lot of people think that? Because they have the belief that you have an immortal soul, and as soon as you kill yourself, your soul will either go up to heaven or go down to hell, and therefore you can't repent of it, and then you kill it. Well, your last act is killing yourself, and therefore you can't repent of it, and therefore you're going down to hell, right? You're not going to go to heaven because of that act. But it's not. Suicide is not the unpardonable sin. He said that, and he went away and hanged himself. The chief priests took the pieces of silver, and they said, a lot of them might like to keep it, but it's not lawful for us to put this money into the treasury, because now this is blood money. We paid this to kill this guy, you know. We hired this guy to lead us to that guy so we could kill that guy. So we can't, that's blood money. And they conferred together, and with the money they bought Potter's Field as a burial place for strangers. For this reason, that field is called the Field of Blood to this day. Then that which was spoken of by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, that they took 30 pieces of silver, the price. It was already in the book of Zechariah, by the way. You'll read it in Zechariah, but he's saying that Jeremiah spoke it. Jeremiah said they took pieces of silver and the price of one, the price it had been set by the sons of Israel, and they gave them for Potter's Field as the Lord directed. He was sort of but he couldn't live with himself. Now you're his father. You're his father. You know, how do you tell people? Everybody who knows him, you know, nobody likes a traitor. Nobody likes a betrayer. Nobody likes a person that they have no respect for it. And Simon Iscariot has got to live with this during his lifetime. His name is mentioned in the New Testament. In the book of Acts, chapter 1, verse 18, they're talking about, now this man acquired a field with the reward of his wickedness, and falling headlong, he burst open in the middle, and all his bowels gushed out. He's talking about Judas Iscariot. He was called the son of perdition, John chapter 17 and verse 12. While I was with them, I was keeping them in your name. This is Jesus praying. This is John 17. You have given, I was keeping them in your name, which you have given me, and I guarded them, and not one of them has perished except the son of perdition. The word perdition means destruction. The son of destruction. Whether it's the son that he is destroying things, or he is the one that's going to be destroyed, it can be a double entendre here, a double meaning. Because it's the same word that's used of the man of sin in 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3. He's called the son of perdition or the son of destruction. Identical Greek words. And Paul wrote it like this: let no one deceive you in any way, for this will not come about unless apostasy comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction. That's 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 3. Did Judas have free will? When Jesus said, one of you will betray me, was it, you have to betray him? Somebody's got to do it. Did he have free will? Jesus said, I've chosen you 12. One of you is a devil. Did he have free will? Well, listen to this little verse in Acts chapter 1. They prayed. Now they're trying to replace Judas. They say this: Lord, you, Lord, who know the hearts of all men, show which one of these two you have chosen to occupy the ministry and the apostleship from which Judas turned aside to go to his own place. Judas was turning aside from God's way early on. He was a thief. He was plotting. He wanted money. How much will you give me to betray him? He wanted to force Jesus into doing things. I think he probably wanted the kingdom of God to come right then. And maybe the best way to get the kingdom of God come is to betray Jesus and have them try to take over. And Jesus then will use his supernatural powers. Maybe he is a king. But he wasn't my Lord. Judas never called him Lord. Talk about decisions. Talk about idolatry. Lust for this and a lust for that. You know, there's an old statement. I heard it by Jim Rohn years ago in one of his lectures. And I thought it was very telling. And it goes like this: be careful what you become in the process of getting what you want. Be careful what you become. Judas maybe wanted money, maybe wanted acknowledgement, maybe wanted this, maybe. What did he become in his lust, in his thievery? He became the greatest betrayer of all time. This deed will never go away. And every year, something is said about Judas Iscariot, every year. And every time we take the bread and the wine, we're going to read a passage that is forever in the Bible. Paul said it on the night in which he was betrayed. Jesus took bread and broke it. And he took wine and passed it to his disciples. He said, this is my body. This is my blood. On the night in which he was betrayed, it will never go away. So we all have to pay heed to this little verse in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 22. If anyone does not love the Lord, he is to be accursed. Maranatha, meaning our Lord will come. Be careful what you become in the process getting what you want.